Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, the center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Moon. As your host, Brother Africa, we are doing a special program tonight. And this program is about, let's talk about Cuba. Let's talk about Cuba. What is about Cuba that's making the whole world go wild, understanding the beautiful work that's going on in Cuba? And what we're going to do tonight is we have four organizations. They're going to talk about Cuba from their perspectives and their interests. What we're going to do tomorrow is give you a particular different perspective on what is Cuba and why we of just and freedom loving people should come to the support and aid of our brothers and sisters in Cuba. So like always, let's get started with this party by introducing our guests for tonight. We first will start off with Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, welcome to Africa on the Moon. Please introduce yourself and your organization to our audience.
Certainly. Thanks for having me, Brother Africa. And revolutionary greetings to the fellow panelists and the listening audience. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Next we have with us is Brother Haki. Brother Haki is an organizer for the African Awareness Association. Brother Haki, introduce yourself to our listening audience.
Peace, Brother Africa, and thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamathi Mashoki. I'm currently with African Awareness, and I'm all about institution building. I think institution building is extremely important in terms of bringing about the desired kind of change that we seek. Without institutions, it's very difficult to actually form a plan in terms of which way forward. So institutions are extremely important, and that's what I'm about. And I want to thank you again for allowing me on the show.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Father and Brother Haki, We're going to bring in our Sister Cheryl Levant. She's a representative for the National Network on Cuba. Sister Cheryl, can you share with our people something about you and your organization? Welcome to Africa on the Moon.
Yes, thank you, Brother Africa, for inviting us to your program today. I'm very sorry I couldn't be with you in Richmond this evening, but the National Network on Cuba is striving to unite all of the forces inside the United States that are opposed to the blockade of Cuba, the U.S. blockade, the strangulation blockade that they've imposed on the revolutionary people of Cuba all these 57 years. So we work together with many different forces who have divergent views. What unites us is Cuba and support for the Cuban Revolution, support for the right of Cuba to self-determination, understanding what the Cuban Revolution has meant to the people in Cuba, and in my particular perspective is understanding what that revolution can mean for us here in the United States as well. So thank you again for inviting me to the show. What all the organizing around the Solidarity with Cuba is crucial right now, as you so well understand and promote, and African awareness, and the AAPRPGC also works very hard around this, and I'm pleased to be with all of this, these dedicated panelists tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Cheryl. And next we have with us Sister Gail. She's Gail Walker. She's an organizer and executive director of IFCO, Pastors for Peace. Sister Gail, introduce yourself and tell us a little something about Pastors for Peace, IFCO.
Yes, good evening, Brother Africa. Thank you. Thank you all, fellow panelists, for participating in this important conversation about Cuba. I am here in Richmond as part of the 28th U.S.-Cuba Friendshipment Caravan, an annual project that we organize in solidarity with our Cuban family to impart information about the reality regarding Cuba, and to fight back against the aspects and impact of the genocidal blockade policy itself. IFCO, Pastors for Peace, has been engaged in this work since 1992, when we began organizing caravans of humanitarian aid, and we have since then been involved in hosting a number of delegations, allowing people to understand and experience Cuba firsthand, and we think that that's the most important way to really eradicate and reverse the impact of the blockade. And then finally, I would say, vis-a-vis our Cuba-related work, we've been blessed to be the entity within the United States that facilitates the scholarship offer that Cuba has made to young people who are interested in studying medicine at the Latin America School of Medicine. We've had more than 145 graduates of the program. Another almost 30 will be graduating this summer. It's a wonderful program that continues to grow and flourish, and we're just honored to be able to be the entity to help facilitate that process for U.S. Young people interested in taking advantage of that wonderful gift.
We'd like to thank you again, thank all our panelists tonight and guests for allowing this time to have the opportunity to share from your experiences working with Cuba and working around this whole issue of Cuba and U.S. relations. What I would like to do at this point in time for each organization, we know that when we look at Cuba, Cuba means different things to different people. So from an organizational standpoint of view, how do y'all view Cuba? What is your interest, and why do you see Cuba as a viable means to throw your solidarity around? Start with you, Brother Anthony. What does Cuba mean to your organization, and why have you came to the support and aid of Cuba?
Okay. We support Cuba because of its contributions to humanity in general, and to the African Revolution in particular. Since its revolution in 1959, Cuba has numerous times provided aid to Africans in the diaspora and on the continent throughout the history of its revolutionary process. And also, its contributions it has shared its limited resources with all of suffering humanity to the best of its ability. And so, the Cuban revolutionary process must be supported because it offers an alternative to the capitalist model of development, which the imperialists are trying to impose upon the world. And also, to give a couple of examples, Cuba was very helpful in terms of the Algerian struggle for independence, as well as trying to combat the neocolonialist forces in the Congo. And also aiding Angola, Namibia, and Azania, South Africa, in terms of dismantling the colonialist regimes in those areas. And also its numerous assistance to those Africans in the diaspora that were struggling against political repression in various parts of the diaspora, including the U.S.
Thank you, Brother Andrew. Haki, the African Women's Association. What is that interest and why they see it necessary to rather than a flag when it comes to Cuba?
Well, I think one of the things we have to keep in mind, Cuba is the epitome of organization. Historically, when we look at the terms of the challenges that Cuba faced in terms of achieving this revolution, we have to be marveled by its accomplishments. But more importantly, to be able to withstand the mightiest military on the planet and to defy it and to actually be in a position to actually create a system which is not only holistic, but one is just, moral, and correct. So I think that Cuba serves as a beacon for the rest of the world in terms of what humanity could be. I think equally as important is one of the things when we think about the notion in terms of institutions, one of the things in America, we got away from the notion in terms of how institutions impact on people. Cuba is a sterling example in terms of how institutions impact on people. So the values like caring, sharing, empathy, those kind of things which make a person whole are evident in Cuba. So I think we could do well to learn a lot from Cuba in terms of not only in terms of how to go about forming this revolution, but more importantly, how to create institutions which bring the best out of human beings. So we owe Cuba a tremendous debt.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Sister Cyril, what's the interest for National Network on Cuba? Why have the National Network of Cuba decided to rally around the flag when it comes to Cuba?
Well, the purpose of the National Network on Cuba is Cuba, of course. The National Network on Cuba was formed in the early 1990s when the collapse of the Soviet Union and the Eastern European trading bloc that Cuba had really relied on for equal and fair trade during the early years of the blockade and the hostility and invasion from the United States. Cuba was thrust into a tremendous economic crisis, unknown, just suddenly. And at that moment, the United States government felt that they could come in and destroy socialism in Cuba and the revolutionary achievements for the Cuban people that had been made. At that time, people who recognized the Cuban Revolution as a step forward and a right of the Cuban people to sovereignty and to determine their own destiny, people inside the United States and in other countries as well, came together and said, We need to find a way to work together to counteract what the United States is trying to do to Cuba. And in the years that have gone by, there have been many, organizational initiatives, educational. Sister Dale Walker is the leader now of a preeminent organization that has really shown the way in putting justice on the line in challenging the blockade by consistent 25 years of travel challenges and other solidarity efforts that shone a light on what the United States was doing with Cuba. There was the struggle to return Elian Gonzalez to his family in Cuba after he was captured by more distant relatives in Miami and held hostage. There was the Cuban Five. At the same time as the National Network on Cuba was formed, Cuba was very concerned that there was going to be an invasion, another invasion like the Bay of Pigs, a military attempt to overturn the revolution. And they sent really heroes to come and work as an early warning system inside the United States on September 12th. 1990, oh my gosh, I can't remember the date. In the late 1990s, they arrested the Cuban Five, and they were railroaded to jail, and actually they were finally released on December 17th, 2014 in a fantastic victory. These are Gerardo Hernandez, the United States government, sentenced to two life terms plus 15 years. They were told that they would never see the light of day, that Cuba would forget them, but Cuba never forgot them. The honorable and heroic Fidel Castro, the historic leader of the Cuban Revolution, said, volverán, that they will return. And in fact, they did return, and they returned because the movement here and around the world and the people of Cuba stood steadfast. So basically, the National Network on Cuba came together to defend the sovereignty of Cuba and the right of Cubans to determine their own destiny, their own socialism, and continues to this day to do that.
Thank you, Sister Sheila. Sister Gail, can you explain to us co-pastor of peace is rather than a flag when it comes to Cuba?
Well, I think that your other guests have really eloquently laid out all of the wonderful things that Cuba represents and has in the past and continues to as we move into the future. There's the obvious ways in which Cuba has consistently really, truly put people first. And so in the areas of health and education and the environment and countless other examples exist where Cuba has really reflected what it means to be a government that is about enhancing the life of the people themselves. And as an organization, IFCO Pastors for Peace, as an organization that has been committed to the fight for social justice, it was a no-brainer that we could see the relationship between the work that we do and support and that Cuba represents. There is an important aspect of our work that involves educating people about Cuban reality, because we know that one of the things that is most needed is a sense of what is truly happening in Cuba. Who are the Cuban people? What is it that they represent that they find most near and dear And so I think it's important for people, particularly those living in the United States, to understand that. And we try to do that through the various caravans that we've done on an annual basis since 1992. Delegations, where we focus on different aspects of Cuban reality, whether it be health or justice or the environment, and et cetera. It's important for people to be able to travel and see for themselves what's going on in order to help really fully embrace and understand all of what Cuba has to offer. And we have always felt that there's not a contradiction between what Cuba represents and what anyone who is interested in fighting for justice, whether that's from a secular point of view or a religious point of view. We've often heard it said, my father, the late Reverend Lucius Walker, who was a founder of the founding director of ISCO and founder of the Pastors for Peace program, used to say quite often, there is no contradiction between the teachings of Jesus Christ and the Cuban Revolution. And there were some who would be, you know, taken aback by that statement. But I think as someone who was really committed to liberation theology and understood the teachings of a historic figure like Jesus, who really was interested in putting the well-being of people first, there's that very profound connection that exists. And I think to this day, the reason why we continue to honor Cuba, support our Cuban family, and support and defend Cuba's right to sovereignty and self-determination, in hopes that the things that Cuba can offer the world will only continue to be expanded and to grow. We're grateful for Cuba.
Okay, let's talk about issue that you just raised, Sister Gail, the things that Cuba can offer to the world. I think those who know nothing about Cuba, and most American people know very little or nothing about Cuba, and they reject Cuba as being an inferior society when you compare it to the American society. So for all of my panelists tonight, I want each one of y'all to give y'all perspective. What can Cuba offer to the world, and what has Cuba offered to the world? We'll start with you, Sister Gail, since you laid out with the question earlier.
Well, I think, you know, there's so many ways to answer that, and I'm sure all of us on the line, you know, can speak about a different example, but I'll just pick a one or two. Given the fact that we at ISCO have been honored to be the facilitators of this medical school scholarship program, Fidel had the great vision of taking a naval base and converting it into an institution of medical training, and he called this training center the Latin America School of Medicine. And he conceived of this when he met with rice farmers and representatives of the Congressional Black Caucus, who were really talking about health disparities in the United States. And he thought this would be a wonderful way to extend solidarity to the people of the United States. And I think that that's a second thing that's very important for people to understand, that regardless of the fact that the U.S. government has maintained this longstanding evil blockade policy, Cuba has always made a distinction between the policies of the government and the people of the United States. And there has consistently been an extended arm of love and friendship and support to the people. And that's yet another example, as well as the various products that Cuba manufactures and makes available and would make available to the United States if this blockade policy weren't in place. So like I said, there's so many different examples, and I'll just step back and allow others to share about some of those wonderful examples.
Does the show?
Well, I think that Cuba, you know, one thing that Cuba offers is hope. That, mm-hmm. in fact, here in the United States, we really don't have to endure the kind of oppression, the kind of racism and gender discrimination against, economic deprivation that is rampant throughout inner cities, rural areas, throughout the country, that it really doesn't have to be this way. And, you know, even though the economic, financial, and commercial blockade of Cuba, which still exists, has been aimed at the people of Cuba and hurting the people of Cuba, what it has also done is kept, as Gail was saying, people in the United States from knowing Cuba, from seeing mm-hmm. Cuba, from understanding that there's a fundamental difference. Despite the fact that the Cubans are the first to say that they have problems and it's not perfect and all that, when you travel there and you find the lack of stress that, you know, that people live under day to day here, trying to figure out how to survive, that in itself is lifted off people, that people in Cuba don't have to worry about whether they have a roof over their head. There are news reports that there are 5,000 children in Detroit who are homeless. In Cuba, there are murals, and this is true, that there are millions of children around the world that are sleeping in the streets. Not one of them is a Cuban. In Cuba, you can see the Haitian refugees in Tijuana in Mexico trying to get asylum here in the United States. They're sleeping in the streets. There are kids sleeping in the streets. There are Mexican people under bridges here in the United States. The fact that the people of Cuba have free education, they're not burdened by debt. They don't not go to school because they can't afford it. They have good primary education. People with disabilities are not just taken care of. People with disabilities are given the support to develop to their fullest potential. To tell people that there is another way to live besides what we are living under here, under the threat of war constantly, under the horror of turning on your television set or looking at something and seeing that the United States government is bombing Syria, that there's a famine in Somalia, that Cuba holds out a beacon, that there is another way to have the world. And it can be done with peace and with justice and with dignity. That's kind of how I, of course, there are many things, but to me, that's the most important thing to me, that there is another way.
Okay, Doug Packy, what Cuba has offered the world?
Yep. I'm sorry, say again?
Yes, Doug Packy.
Yes, again.
What Cuba has to offer the world.
Okay, let me just piggyback a little bit on what Cheryl is saying. One of the things is that often in the West, socialism is depicted as a obsolete or not even obsolete, but a failed system. So clearly Cuba has taken socialism and showed the benefits of socialism in terms of what it actually can do to a population. You know, one of the things when I think about America and I think about the policies that exist in this country in terms of disparity of wealth between those who have and those who don't have, and we talk about policy or tax policy specifically that is geared toward ensuring that those who have the most can continue more. Now, when you think about it, this disparity in terms of wealth does nothing in terms of stimulating the overall economy. In fact, the more wealth you give to the top, then the more unstable the system becomes. It's a real irony. So I think people need to understand that this notion in terms of capitalism is certainly something that only can, something that is in the best interest of all humanity. And so Cuba is doing a good job in terms of demonstrating that reality in terms of the importance in terms of socialism. I think the world at this point is at a crossroads. I mean, clearly. So we have economic policy. We got a global economic system in place which ensures that disparity not only is diverse in terms of among American populace. We've got a situation where this kind of disparity is also exists on a global level, to the extent that we got six people in America, six multi-billionaires who control 50% of the world's GDP, of the world's wealth. It's a shame. But the thing is that we have to understand that none of that does anything in terms of A, stimulating the economy, or B, creating jobs, or C, creating a just and harmonious society. On the contrary, it does everything, these policies does everything in terms of facilitating all those things that are not in the best interest of humanity. So Cuba's example in terms of socialism, in terms of the desirability of socialism, I think it's something that the world has to marvel at. And I think increasingly more and more people begin to realize that this notion in terms of capitalism, in terms of this disparity that exists in terms of financing, is in fact is a smokescreen. In fact, is geared toward empowering the few at the expense of the many, and such a system cannot stand. So I think Cuba's doing a very good job in terms of, you know, highlighting, you know, the problems in terms of the capitalist system. So I think that's one of the biggest things Cuba offers to the world.
Anthony?
Yes, certainly. Let's see. I want to, I concur with all the points that made earlier, and would add that I think Cuba has shown that there is an alternative to the exploitative system of capitalism, that it is demonstrated, in spite of the blockade, the superiority of scientific socialism over capitalism, where the interests of the people are placed first, and that even with limited resources, if the people are interests are placed first, then it is possible to build a way of life that minimizes the exploitation of human beings by each other. And even though it is struggling to develop, socialism, even in that struggle, it is to demonstrate the superiority of socialism and the fact that illiteracy is at a minimal level, that education is accessible to the masses of the people, that women are able to participate fully in the development of society, and Africans in Cuba have more tools with which to combat or minimize racism. Let's see, the inequities associated with capitalism are virtually non-existent in Cuba. They've been able to eliminate unemployment and homelessness, for example, and I think this is something that the imperialists do not want the masses of the people to see, and that's why there's so much disinformation spread about Cuba to this day. But I think because of their level of organization and the will of the people, the revolution has persevered in spite of all the obstacles put against it by the imperialist forces of the world.
Thank you, Brother Anthony, and to our listening audience. This is Africa on the Move. Tonight we're going to talk about Cuba. Let's talk about Cuba. And the central theme is Cuba, its ally, a friend, and a neighbor. We are with four organizations that has a long history of working with Cuba. Tonight we have representatives from the All African Peoples Revolutionary Party, D.C., for African Awareness Association, for National Network on Cuba, and for IFCO, Pastors for Peace. This is a great opportunity for you to call in to express anything that you want to ask and know about Cuba, because you have four experts they can share their experiences and their understanding of Cuba from more of an objective point of view. And we'd like to have you call in by dialing 23-679-0841. When you dial in and you want to make a comment or have a question, please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for the calls, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the narratives, the way Cuba has been described, and some of its real realities. So right now, we're going to pause for the calls. We're in the seat. We're going to take the heat. If we define it, we're going to stand behind it. This is Africa on the Move. We'll be back after this pause for the calls.
Respect. Our nation at its best feeds the hungry. Our nation at its worst. At its worst, our nation will have partnership with South Africa.
Free, 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 free.
I know this girl whose name is Lola. She lives in a country called Angola. Her president's name is Dos Santos, and a man named Sabembe playing him too close. She says, "Hey brother, my country's in a war. We are fighting rebels backed by Pretoria." Upon hearing this, I was pretty upset. You know what? I went and told the Set, and the Set said, "Yo,
universal
tone. So are you with it? I'm in beyond a shadow of doubt.
So let's spell it on.
Spell it on.
Spell it on out.
A-F-R-I-D-A. Angola, Soweto, Zimbabwe, Tanzania, Zambia, Mozambique, and Botswana. So let us speak about the motherland.
Speak about the motherland.
We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move as your host, Brother Africa. Tonight we're doing a special program on Let's Talk About Cuba. Cuba as an ally, a neighbor, and a friend. Right now we're going to come back with Sister Gail. We just heard this musical piece called Free South Africa. Now when we talk about this whole history of Africa, one of the things we must recognize is the vital role that Cuba has played in African development politically. And when we talk about that, we really talk about a people's social policy in terms of how they will implement their social policies inside and outside of Cuba. And I thank Sister Kim for Pastors of Peace. I think y'all have played a very crucial role in terms of being part of Cuba policy, or understanding that the best contribution you can make for human beings is to give back freely to the human beings. And I'm saying that because a lot of people have heard somewhat about this program, about how generous the Cubans are in terms of training foreign students to become medical doctors and stuff. Can you talk about this medical program under the direction of IFCO Pastors of Peace?
Yeah, Brother Africa, it's really a wonderful example, again, in which of how Cuba continues to give back. Despite, you know, it's, as has been mentioned by other panelists, the limitations that Cuba has been forced to endure, it hasn't stepped back from really reaching out and providing service, providing and giving, helping others to become experts in the arena of health, something that Cuba has managed to do despite being blockaded. It's this wonderful medical school scholarship program through the Latin America School of Medicine that has been a tremendous gift to people from more than 126 nations, 26,000 graduates of ELAM, the Latin America School of Medicine, the Spanish acronym is ELAM, have graduated and are practicing in underserved communities across the globe. Many people know of Cuba's commitment to health, and many people know about the fact that Cuba exports doctors, while other nations, certainly, namely the United States, exports weapons and war. It's an honor for IFCO to serve as that entity in the United States to help facilitate this process for those living in the United States. These are young people who have got a commitment and a passion for medicine, but don't have the $250,000 that would be required to go to med school in the United States. So these are young people that are being trained in preventative care and returning home to their various states in the U.S. and providing this unique medical care in communities where it's needed most. So it's there's so much more that could be said about what it is that Cuba represents, but I think that this is a pillar of the Cuban revolutionary project. The fact that despite limited resources, Cuba has said that this is a mark, this is a stamp that we want to make on the world, and they've managed to do that in every continent, exporting cadres of doctors to help address medical emergencies wherever they might arise. And then, of course, providing this medical training so that that same kind of giving back can happen not just from the Cubans themselves, but training others to do that in their own home countries. So it's a great program, this ELAM, Latin American Medical School Scholarship Program. And my hope would be that folk who are interested in learning more about it would contact us at IFCO, those in the United States, contact IFCO by logging onto our website, ifconews.org, and scrolling down to the medical school tab to learn about the program and how to apply.
Thank you, Brother Gail. Sister Cheryl, the National Network on Cuba, is in solidarity with Cuba. To be in solidarity with Cuba, Sister Cheryl, one of the things in the West when they talk about Cuba, they paint Cuba as a poor country. They paint Cuba still as a country where the people don't have basic freedom to truly speak and act according to their best interests. Now, what is your understanding based upon the realities of going to Cuba when it comes to that narrative? What would you say to the people around that question of freedom to speak, freedom to act, you know, this whole question of people being poor?
Well, you know, the question of being poor, you know, if you have enough to eat and a roof over your head that's secure, you have medical care, and you have free education and are encouraged to develop to your full human potential, is that poverty? Cuba has come, I mean, when you look at the history of Cuba, roots of the transatlantic slave trade are in Cuba. When you look at what colonialism and imperialism has done to countries all around the world, what the United States still is continuing to do around the world, the kind of way that imperialism has held back development. You look at Cuba. Cuba has gone light years. People there are actually free. They're free to talk. They're free to learn. They're free to develop. They're free in every sense of the word, and they're free to determine their own development and their own the way their society is structured and the way that their society is governed. When you go to Cuba, you see buildings that aren't painted, but that's not poverty. You know, it's not that Cuba has a lot of wealth. It doesn't, because of its history of colonialism, because of its history of the blockade. But nonetheless, the people there are not poor. They're rich in culture. They're rich in their own dignity. And it's important for people, if they can, to go to Cuba and see Cuba for themselves. The misrepresentation that we get about lack of freedom, I mean, really, people here are free to not be able to buy food because they can't afford it. People here are free to live without utilities because they can't afford it. Is that freedom? Is it freedom to be graduating from high school and not being able to read? Is it, you know, what is this concept of freedom? The concept in the United States of freedom is that you are free to be exploited and you are free to be oppressed. And the fact is that in Cuba, that kind of exploitation and that kind of oppression don't exist anymore, fortunately. But I think, and I'm sure you're going to come around to this, the question is, what do we need to do now? And I think that understanding and talking about Cuba is important, but there's a lot of people who need to see another, to see, not only see Cuba by going there, but to see the kinds of ties that can be made with Cuba now. Since December 17th, 2014, we have more tremendous opportunities for people to learn about Cuba because Cuba can come here and come to the United States and come in a way that hasn't been possible because of the U.S. refusing to recognize Cuba diplomatically. And now there are Cuban doctors coming to Chicago to look at and understand and find ways of trying to help with the genocidal infant mortality that is endemic in cities like in my own home in Detroit. These are ways that we've got people from the embassy who are able to go and talk at universities and explain what about U.S.-Cuba relations. There are people who are doing agricultural work in more depth. So how we can break down those false barriers so people can see more what Cuba has developed and what Cuba has offered to the world.
Thank you, Sister Sheila.
I got off track there. I'm a little sorry there.
No, you did well. Sister Brother Haki, in terms of one of the narratives he often talk about Cuba is around this question of human rights, violation of human rights, and this question of racism. You have been in Cuba. You have interacted with the people. What is your narrative around this whole question of Cuba and its relationship to human rights and this question of fighting racism?
Well, I think let me start with the question in terms of racism. I think one of the things is that there is the subjective nature in terms of human beings. Human beings are quite capable in terms of discriminating against others based upon something as trivial as what they look like. I mean, so that does exist. But the mere fact that Cuba has acknowledged, in fact, that that is an issue, that is a problem, speaks volumes. I think when we contrast that with what's happening in America, there's a great opposition to even discussing the question in terms of race. And there's those who want to believe that, in fact, that because Barack Obama was elected president of the United States is post-racial. And so, therefore, that adequately shut down any discussion in terms of race. So clearly we understand that race continues to be a protracted issue as it relates to America. In Cuba, by virtue of actually dealing with the question in terms of race, now they empower themselves to actually be able to actually change that paradigm. So we all heads off to Cuba in terms of the question in terms of race. So they're doing a great thing in terms of trying to move forward and to just to get people to understand the absurdity in terms of this question of race. One of the things that I respect Fidel Castro a great deal when he articulates the fact that African blood runs through our veins. So that is a very important statement, because one of the things it sort of puts to rest this notion that in fact that because we look dissimilar that somehow, you know, we are different. And in fact reality is that we're all human beings and we trace our origin back to the same place, which is Africa. All our origins go back to the same place. So I think the Cuban leadership understands that the oneness of humanity supersedes, you know, in a free reality as it relates to, capitalist access. So I think Cuba should, we owe Cuba great debt for that. Now, the question in terms of human rights. One of the things about Africa, human rights. In America, we often been deceived, you know, when we talk about human rights. We talk about human rights in the context from the perspective of the powerful or the ruling class. And so when they talk about human rights, they're not talking about in terms.
Man lost Brother Haki. We got to come back to him. But to Brother Anthony, we know that Cuba is a socialist country, it's a revolutionary country, as a revolutionary party. What core principles do you value that the world can benefit from by looking at how Cuba has reorganized its society?
Well, as I stated earlier, Cuba is struggling to build a socialist society in which the interests of the masses of the people are take priority over capital. And one of the implications of that is that the development of the people takes priority over everything else. And that is why education is free and accessible to everybody. Healthcare is free and accessible to everybody. And the cost of housing inside Cuba is minimal compared to what it costs in the U.S. and other capitalist countries. And that's why they've been able, through their revolutionary process, to eradicate homelessness, hunger, starvation, and minimize illiteracy. And I think it is, by the day showing the superiority of the socialist mode of development over capitalism, because the interests of the people reign supreme. And it is fully consistent with the principles which animate Christianity, which Sister Gail alluded to earlier in her observation regarding Cuba. So I think it's important that people understand that the process of development in Cuba is more conducive for human development than the exploitative process we see inside the U.S. and other capitalist countries.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Anthony. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take one more station break. And when we come back, we will ask our callers who would like to call in and ask questions to please call in at 323-679-0841. And you must hit 1 if you will have a comment or a question. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. When we come back, I think the people would like to know how can they travel to Cuba. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to make some closing remarks about Cuba. So we're going to pause for the calls. This is Africa on the Move. We'll be right back.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Have done, and then no longer is being dominated by capitalism. Welcome back to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, one of the key questions I think we all want our, particularly our panelists tonight, to answer, and that question is, what can we do, or how can we best serve, how can we best help Cuba? So I will start first with you, Sister Gail. What would be your recommendation to us? How can we best help Cuba today?
I would say by being present, helping to really spread the accurate information about Cuba. It's been said over and over again by all of our panelists here that there's a lack of clear, you know, honest information available. Not available. I would say it's available, but I think it doesn't get shared as often as it ought to. And that we need to reach out broader than our own circles. We need to, too often we hear that saying that we're preaching to the choir. We need to get outside our own circles and make sure that we're doing all we can to help people have a clearer understanding, challenge the misinformation campaign that's so prevalent within our media, among our elected officials, but and not be ashamed to share information about Cuba based on our own experience or our own educational, you know, education that we've been able to achieve. So I would say by being present, going, visiting Cuba, participating in delegations and brigades that are based on expanding that educational experience, and then returning home to help others really clearly understand what it means to be a Cuban, what it means to live under blockade, and what it means to be a survivor of this beautiful socialist Cuban revolutionary project that is, you know, at the heart of what all Cubans who have succeeded to persevere despite five plus decades of blockade, and despite prior to that, the horrific treatment that people experienced under the Batista regime. So it's being present, pushing forward, and helping to push back against that misinformation campaign that exists, and to create a new narrative about Cuba.
Thank you, Gil. Cheryl, how can we best help Cuba?
I think that especially right at this moment, we can best, you know, one of the things that Cubans often say, Cuba is a priority for its enemies, but not its friends. As friends of Cuba and friends of the revolution, we need to find a way of integrating the truth about Cuba, solidarity with Cuba, with all of the work that we do. Because there isn't an aspect of political work, whether it's in the community or whether it's around international issues, that Cuba isn't related to. And the other thing that's very important, even though it's sometimes distasteful, the blockade has to be ended by Congress. And we have to build a movement in this country on many levels, but also one that's not afraid to go to Congress and say, look, we want this blockade ended, and to build that support in our communities. A number of cities have passed resolutions calling on their congressional representatives to end the blockade. And there is one in the works now in Detroit as well. So part of it is activating these other people that Sister Gail was talking about who aren't in our circles, and getting them to speak out, go on record to say it's time to end the blockade. A lot of people think that everything is fine now. President Obama goes to, you know, Cuba. People can hop, if they have the funds, can hop on a plane, go to Cuba. It doesn't cost nearly what it used to cost. And, you know, and everything appears to be fine, but it's really not fine. That insidious part of the blockade, the financial part of the blockade that won't allow Cuba to, well, now artisanal charcoal. Cuba has exported artisanal charcoal to the United States, and that's basically all that's been allowed. What about our communities are devastated by diabetic foot ulcers that wind up in amputations. People's heart, you know, their will to live is destroyed in many cases for older people who have diabetes, when their feet and their legs start being chopped off piece at a time. Well, Cuba has a medicine and a treatment that can prevent that in 70% of the cases. So, you know, there's a lot. There's the vaccine for cancer. There's treatment for now they've got a treatment for skin cancer. They have developed all kinds of medicines that are used in other countries around the world that people in the United States are denied. You know, you can travel to Cuba, but you can't go on vacation. And the other thing you can't do is you can't legally travel there for medical treatment. Those are things that are explicitly illegal according to U.S. law. So it's time to end all this nonsense and really normalize relations between the United States and Cuba. And that means we have to get out of our comfort zone and go find a way to put that pressure on Congress by getting other people involved. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brother Hackey. How can you best serve and help Cuba?
Well, I think one of the things, I think, you know, clearly, the financial situation is very precarious, you know, for the so-called ruling class in society. So having said that, I think one of the things we can do, I think movements are extremely important. Because what that does is make it economically untenable for the imperialists to take barely needed funds for the sole purpose of trying to undermine Cuba's revolution. So I think that's extremely important. While we deal with our own particular concerns here, you know, in the belly of the beast, I think that the overall impact is one of making it very difficult for these imperialists, you know, to use what remaining funds that exist to actually do destructive kinds of things. Also, I think that one of the things, in addition to that, I think also we have to. We have to organize specifically around the question in terms of, you know, freeing Guantanamo. Guantanamo, you know, that should come to an end. I think that with a mass movement, that's possible that we'd be able to achieve that. So I think that's probably important in terms of helping Cuba a lot, is to get the imperialist forces out of the country of Cuba. So I think that's my view in terms of how we might best help Cuba.
Brother Anthony?
Yes, I concur with all the points that were made earlier, and I would add that we have to work harder to organize the masses of our people in order to pressure the politicians to overturn the blockade and also return Guantanamo back to Cuba, to the Cuban people to whom it correctly belongs, so that they can undo the political and environmental damage that occupation for nearly a century has caused. And I think in addition to educational campaigns, personal visits, sharing experiences, we have to work harder to organize the workers in this society and convince them that it is not in their interest to continue this blockade. It only serves the interests of a very small sector, and that is the ruling 1% of society. It is not in interest to maintain the blockade or end the occupation of Guantanamo.
Okay, and in closing, we know that each one of the organizations are involved in an activity coming up that concerns Cuba. What we want to do right now, we're going to start with you, Sister Gail. I'd like for you to talk about the 28th U.S. French shipment to Cuba, what's the goals, objectives of the traveling to Cuba on the 28th French shipment, and how can people go? How can people get in contact with IFCO if they want to go?
Right. Well, thank you again, Brother Africa, for this opportunity to talk about this work. And it's an honor to be on the line with Cheryl and Hakeem and Anthony as we, you know, have this important conversation at this very important time. The caravan, the 28th French shipment caravan, U.S.-Cuba French shipment caravan, is Been split into two this year. We're doing an educational component where we're stopping in different communities, educating people about the Cuban reality in 55 different events in 30 states over the next 2 weeks. That's an important part of the process for putting Trump on notice that we are committed to supporting all of the advancements that have made, the advancements toward some form of normalizing relations have been made, and that we won't be pushed back. So that's why we started doing this educational aspect of the caravan so early this year. Later in the summer, in July, we'll be heading to Cuba as part of our annual travel challenge. We'll go via Mexico, and we will arrive in Cuba for a 10-day program there, which is sure to be very informative, marking the 50th anniversary of the death of Che and all of what he represents for the Cuban Revolution, to marking the July 26th, which is essentially Cuban Independence Day, and visiting the Latin America School of Medicine, among other things. But this is a very important year, we think, as we continue to try to advance U.S.-Cuba relations. People can learn more about the caravan by contacting us at IFCO. The best way to reach us is via the website, and that would be ifconews.org. That's I, F as in freedom, C-O, NEWS.org, and you can also find out more by going to the blog we have listed at CubaCaravan27.org, CubaCaravan2017.org.
Sister Gail, for those who may not go on the caravan, but who would like to maybe become a supporter or a member or just become a contributor, can they do that? How can they do that?
Most definitely. Again, you know, reaching out to us, contacting us at ifconews.org. There's a way that you can communicate with, send messages. But it's important to have supporters available to help push back should there be any kind of resistance that we encounter as we return to the U.S. When we go in July, it will be a travel challenge. We are going without a license. We are going because we have the right to be in solidarity with our Cuban friends and family, and not to have to be restricted by categories of travel. We want people to go, and we think it's important for people to go no matter how they do. But we also think if there's something very unique and special about the travel challenge, and but come with that comes the risk of a government pushback. And so having support for those who can't go on the caravan, support for the program is equally, if not more important. And ways that people can do that would be to reach out to us on that website, ifconews.org, and send us a message. Let us know that you want to support the Caravanistas and that you want to support the work to ultimately work to rescind the blockade.
Thank you, Sister Gail.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we'll go to our Sister Cheryl for National Network on Cuba. It's our understanding that you're going to be leaving shortly, maybe shortly, going to Cuba for a certain program. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the purpose of the program, and how can the people join and help build the National Network on Cuba?
Well, the National Network on Cuba has a website. It's nnoc.info. We also participate in a monthly Twitter campaign to end the blockade. That's an international effort. That we use the hashtag Nomas Bloqueo in Spanish, NOMASBLOQUEO. We're also working on a program that actually, Brother Africa, you were kind of at the beginning of it when the Organization of American States had that meeting in Panama, and we were reaching out to media to try to have a uniform voice against the, you know, what the right wing was trying to do in demonizing Cuba. And also we have to watch out for what's happening with Venezuela as well. But the idea of doing a monthly webinar, possibly on the 17th of the month, and the 17th of the month of every month is recognized internationally by the Cuba Solidarity Movement as a day to find to do something against the blockade. It remembers the 17th of December 2014 when the remaining Cuban heroes who had been incarcerated here in the United States were released, and the United States finally admitted that Cuba does exist as an independent country. But anyway, so the 17th of the month, we're talking about doing webinars on various issues about Cuba, bringing in speakers. The last one we did was about Guantanamo. We were able to bring in people from Cuba. Sandra Ramirez was able to speak to the audience in that webinar. But also looking for a way of, for example, I mean, in Richmond, there was a support meeting for Pastors for Peace that was held tonight. There was one here in Washington, D.C. that was held Saturday evening. There are meetings that are being held all around the country. There are young people who are going for May Day. There are, you know, there's the Venceremos Brigade. There are a whole host of creative and different projects all around the country. And we're looking at these webinars as a way of connecting the media, like this program, Africa on the Move, and the, you know, the other media, friendly media, independent media that exists throughout this throughout the United States, to find a way to bring the news forward so that people feel connected in their work around Cuba, can get more of an idea about that. Also, the National Network on Cuba is a membership organization. Both the AAPRPGC and African Awareness are member organizations, as is IFCO Pastors for Peace. On May 21st, we're having a conference call of member organizations. And then again in the fall, we'll be having an annual face-to-face meeting. So we encourage organizations to affiliate with the National Network on Cuba and to figure out how we can work together to build a stronger movement here in the United States.
Hakeem had to take over. My phone cut off.
I'm sorry, say again? Okay, all right. Brother Anthony, would you tell me?
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit about LD and the significance of such things.
Yes, certainly. The All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, is organizing African Liberation Day / Palestine Day on Saturday, May 20th. 2017, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at St. Stephen's Incarnation Church, located at 1525 Newton Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. Our theme this year is Pan-Africanism, yes, U.S. AFRICOM and NATO, no, U.S. out of Africa, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and Shannon Airport, Ireland. Dismantle the destructive U.S. military-industrial complex. Honor Fidel. Long live the Cuban Revolution. Honor Uncle Ho. Long live the Vietnamese Revolution. Honor Malcolm X. Long live the African Revolution. For more information, you can visit our website at www.a-aprp-gc.org. Or you can contact us at 202-239-1651. And if you are in the D.C. metropolitan area, please check out African Liberation Day on that date, Saturday, May 20th.
Also, African Awareness will be taking a tour, a delegation also to Cuba, July 22nd to July 30th. We'll be visiting three different places in Cuba. And we encourage people to come. We want people to see firsthand for themselves exactly what makes Cuba such a marvelous place to live and to visit. For more information, they can contact us at African Awareness Association, all one word, number2@gmail.com, or call us at area code 504-749-7492. And having said that, I want to thank...
804-549-7492-202-714-9435. At this point in time, we will end our program by asking each one of our participants to just give a 1 minute final thought on Cuba, its neighbors, a friend, and an ally. Sister Gail, closing thought, 1 minute.
That's a tough order, right? Cuba, certainly a friend. An ally and a neighbor, and all the more reason why we need to continue to keep up the fight, continue to support Cuba and its revolutionary project, and to educate people about the reality there until we see a complete end to the blockade.
Sister Cheryl?
Continue to fight to end the blockade, to get the U.S. out of Guantanamo and end those regime change programs that are taking money from our communities here in the United States and using it to undermine Cuba and other countries that are struggling against imperialism.
Brother Haki?
Well, humanity is at a crossroads. One of the things that we got to be very clear on is the fact that this economy is very, very precarious. And it's reflected in so that when we talk about all these military interventions, clearly it's a result of the precariousness that it finds itself facing. So we need Cuba to continue to be an example for all humanity and such that, you know, we can create a new paradigm, a world in which, you know, we don't have to worry about poverty, suffering, injustice, intolerance, all those things that adversely impact on the, humanity. So we need Cuba for all those reasons.
Brother Anthony.
Yes, we encourage everybody to give unconditional support to the Cuban revolutionary process and also to organize in order to bring an end to the blockade and the imperialist occupation of Guantanamo Bay in Cuba.
On that note, we'd like to thank all our panelists. We'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing us to come down home to share this very important topic. Let's talk about Cuba. Cuba is an ally, a friend, and a neighbor. We are happy to provide you information because we recognize without information, you cannot think. We are even more proud to provide you organization because we know what organization. You cannot think clearly. An organization is the weapon for the oppressed. Cuba is a good example for that. We ask you to contact these organizations, find out more about these organizations, help strengthen these organizations by actively participating and supporting them. Until next time, remember, Africa on the Move is the community project of the African Awareness Association. You can catch our program every Sunday evening from 7 to 9 p.m., same time, same station. So until next time, let's move to go, describe, to go forward, ever, back, whose level. And we are in solidarity with Cuba and the Cuban people. Long live the Cuban Revolution. We see you on Sunday.
Don't you where you come from? As long as you're a Cause if you come from Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind your nationality, you have got the identity of an African.